Welcome to the Watson Weekly. Today's session is brought to you by Avalara, the tax compliance infrastructure behind some of the most sophisticated marketplace operations in commerce. Here's the problem nobody talks about until they're already in it. You built a great business selling your own inventory, and now the biggest growth driver is selling other people's. The moment you flip the switch, everything multiplies. More sellers, more shipping origins, more states, and more tax exposure. And if you didn't build compliance infrastructure before that growth hit, you're building it on fire. Alan Gaffney did this from scratch at Townchest, a multi-sided marketplace that uses schools as the customer acquisition channel and manufacturers as the fulfillment engine. It's a beautiful model. It also walks straight into every single one of these problems. Today, he's going to tell us what actually broke, what they built to fix it, and what you need to know before you do the same thing in the same situation. Joining him are Justin Samico from Miracle and Nicholas Boucher from Avalara. I'm Rick Watson. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Watson Weekly. We have a great webinar roundtable discussion for you today called Private Storefronts, Shared Suppliers, One Compliance Nightmare. This webinar is brought to you by Avalara and Miracle, and we have a great lineup today. We're going to start with our featured guest, Alan Gaffney, who's the CEO of Townchest. Welcome. Nick Boucher, the Director of Sales, Global Marketplaces at Avalara, and Justin Samico, the Head of Marketplaces Platform Advisory at Miracle. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today.
Thanks, Rick. Great to be here.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah, very excited to talk about the crazy world of compliance and marketplaces. So it'll be fun chat.
Exactly. I mean, this is, especially in enterprise retail, obviously we have problems enough selling our own inventory. And then when you throw a marketplace in the mix, hundreds, thousands of sellers all have different locations. Now you're creating new shipping origins. Every new shipping origin creates new tax compliance issues. This is something that Alan and Townchest has kind of come up firsthand, which is they built a multi-sided marketplace from scratch. It's quite a unique model. And that's really the story that I want to, I guess, start with is really Alan's story of what is Townchest about? How is it set up? Tell me about the various sides and players of the business.
Yeah, certainly. No, and again, great to be on. But yeah, Townchest is a retailer first. And what we do is we partner with schools and manufacturers. So the goal is we partner with schools to help them raise funding and give them actually access to a new source of funding for each school so the volleyball coach, et cetera, can help. But it's not fundraising. We are basically a model where you're shopping for good is what it's all about with us. So effectively, right. What we do is we partner with great manufacturers. We work directly with them, and then we supply literally a full range of retail products to our supporters or to the school supporters. So a school can come on and in as little as 5 minutes, create a shopping for good program. And instead of the school having to ask supporters for more money, they're just asking them to shop what they like to do and love to do every day. So we're tapping into sort of the regular routine consumer shopping environment and then helping shoppers actually benefit, help their school and get the products that they want. But that in itself, in concept, seems really simple. Schools love it. They're signing up. Manufacturers love it. We get three generations of families to manufacturers. You know, we have the high school kids, we have the parents, we have the grandparents. Everyone is all excited about, you know, shopping and helping their local community. And we really approached it and said, oh, well, let's start in Ohio and let's expand out. We're an Ohio-based company. And even as something as simple as thinking about launching regionally, if you think about the model in a marketplace kind of a fashion, we have a school that signs up in Ohio, but the friends and family and parents are not just in Ohio, they're in Washington,
right.
They're in Florida. So all of a sudden our nexus changes almost overnight as we add a new school. So it makes life a little more interesting than we had anticipated when we started.
Yeah, Nexus is fun, isn't it, Alan?
Yes. Yeah. A word I never thought I knew or know how to spell, but you know, now I do.
Yeah. And I guess it's interesting. I mean, you think when you come into a job or a new major project like a marketplace and the compliance issues it creates, what did you think would be the hard problems versus what turned out to be the hard problems?
Well, you know, my background tends to be marketing and sales. So my first problems assumed was going to be recruiting all the great partners and manufacturers and bringing them on board. And then, you know, again, getting all the schools engaged and energizing the parents and the supporters to, you know, buy into the model, understand the value proposition. That's sort of what is top of mind when you're doing this. And then making sure, like any retailer, we have the breadth of product that customers want, you know, and things like that. So making sure we've got enough critical mass. That ended up being the easier bit as we looked at it. What we started to realize is that we really needed to think nationwide right from the get-go, even though we started sort of with a regional concept, but just the nature of, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Rick, you know, bringing new manufacturers on for us, we have Fortune 200 brands on our platform, and we also have smaller mid-sized manufacturers and smaller manufacturers. So they all have different sort of capabilities and you know, brand standards and things like that that you're trying to bring together. So the actual operational aspects of it and making sure, as this sort of topic talks about, compliance was a whole new area that we didn't think would come at us so fast. You know, we knew we would have to deal with it, but it came at us much faster than we had expected.
Got it. And the idea is that you have this sort of platform, all the suppliers can sell through any of the marketplaces? Are they selling through all simultaneously, and each marketplace is sort of its unique animal that can be different?
So what's wonderful for our suppliers is that they get to actually sell on all the marketplaces. So because the goal is that we will set up dedicated stores per school, you know, so all the high schools, for example, around the country can set up a dedicated store. But in order to give them the full breadth of product, we allow our suppliers to be able to participate in all of those marketplaces. So we can have thousands of storefronts and really trying to do a unified catalog, you know, where appropriate to do that. So it actually adds a broader level of complexity in doing that, because it's not like we can confine it to, oh, this store is only going to have these few manufacturers and we can sort of figure out those folks. When we bring on a new manufacturer, be them small or larger, in Texas versus Washington State, we have to make sure they're compliant everywhere.
Got it. And Justin, you know, being from Miracle, is this something you see often where there's one customer that runs a set of marketplaces with a shared kind of back-end experience, or is this something fairly unique?
No, this is very common amongst many of our Miracle customers. And if you think about Miracle as a product, really our entire goal is to get disparate sources of supply, take that into a unified, simple way to push that to whatever channels it needs to go into. And so, you know, if you look at our customer base, it's retailers, wholesalers, distributors, and then even within consumer, you have things like media, airline loyalty, et cetera. So a whole range of different customer profile that we support. Yeah. And it's all about the idea that Miracle is built for maximum amount of flexibility, but also incredible control. And so that's how TownChess is able to support so many different marketplaces with one single platform, which is a really, I think, great concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great concept. And I think the flexibility afforded is really great for the retailer. I'm interested to see Nick's feeling about compliance tends to be the oh crap moment in the project where you're like, what do we do now? Is that when people give you a call, or is it from the beginning people realize it, or how does that part work?
Well, back to Alan's point about scary, right? It's a world where you're not really sure what's going to happen. And as Justin just alluded to, the categories and the logistics and movement become a really complex relationship between the marketplaces, the requirements around the states, and what you need to deliver from a tax perspective. And then exemptions, right? Like Alan's mentioning, he's dealing with a lot of schools and a lot of different B2B positioning. So how do you handle that, Alan, as you're expanding your marketplace, using Miracle as your interface and having your catalog and your logistics and inventory? And how do you model that around compliance, and who's ending their transaction, who's handling the calculation, who's doing all that interface requirements. So Alan, I'm sure you've experienced that with the B2B relationship between your schools and your vendors. And so Alan, you probably one of the things that nightmare that keeps you up. Is that pretty accurate to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the term seller of record, you know, who is it?
Right.
It's one of the things you have to sort of look at, you know, and, you know, for us, what we've found is we needed a sort of a hybrid model. So we needed, we have some of our partners who want to sort of maintain sort of that seller record relationship, but we have other partners who would like us to take on that relationship as well. So we, all our partners ship directly to our end customers, which is wonderful for them because they get ownership of that relationship. And that's sort of our promise to them that they get to their end customers. But as we think about then compliance, you're looking at it from both a vendor perspective, like, so each of our partners are, you know, maybe have a different state with us where we're the seller record for some and they're the seller record on others. So we have to make sure our structure, both through Miracle and Avalara, can note that, because in any given order, you know, because it's a mixed order environment, right? Because they could order from three different vendors. It's the classic shopping cart environment, which from an end supporter. So we need to make sure that we can sort of manage that relationship through, and without sort of the back-end infrastructure to sort of just keep track of it, it can be quite difficult. We offer a service to all of our vendors that we will become the seller record for them because it simplifies their reporting and their needs. But even doing that for them, there's then the notification and compliance and information you have to send them, because even though we are maybe paying taxes on their behalf on the sales tax side, we also have a situation where they're also selling directly into that state or whatever. So now we have to tell them what we've paid on their behalf so they can report it in sales. So there's reporting either way. So, you know, you end up having to share information either, you know, with your partner, either directly through the order system, which is simple, right? The order, the sales tax comes on and it goes right into their ERP system, the back end. But if we're seller record, they don't want the sales tax data going in. So you have to sort of think through those scenarios, which, again, not things you anticipate at the beginning, because it's like, oh, yeah, it's simple. We're getting orders. We're giving you orders. You already have order systems, so we all should be good. But without really having sort of the insights from, you know, from Nick and his team and from Justin and their team, you know, to help us figure out how to structure this correctly, you know, that was a great help to us in going through it. But again, it was one of those unanticipated challenges that we went through.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting question about how you talked about the pricing. You know, we were having conversations before. It's kind of like the products are sort of MAP or MSRP pricing, but there's a negotiated wholesale price between yourself and the supplier. So right, the economics look like a dropship relationship, yet to the customer, it looks like a marketplace. Mm-hmm. How does that set up in the system level, Justin?
Yeah, for sure. So this is actually a topic I'm bit nerdy about, because I think it's one of the most interesting things happening today around what we call the unified strategies around dropship and marketplace. And what do they look like? Because there's, I think, a lot of misconceptions about both of them. Dropship being old legacy, marketplace being a wild west. Really, the lines are getting really blurry at this point. So you see marketplaces with, you know, hyper curated, and you see dropships that are hyper scale.
Right.
And you kind of see a little bit of both. Because in the end, it's not really a UI UX decision from a customer point of view. It's all about that supplier relationship. And really, the difference between the three or those two models, it comes down to your business strategy, your financial strategy, and legal strategy. So seller record being the legal thing, and business strategy on who owns pricing and financial in terms of what the economics look like. Within Miracle, you can do both. And you can easily shift products and vendors between those two models as you see fit. And there's fantastic arbitrage opportunities as a result. So we're seeing a lot of our customers utilizing these different models in order to better serve their supplier base and their customers.
That level of flexibility seems necessary, especially in a system like this. It sounds like Alan has kind of these first party relationships where he takes on that responsibility, and other ones where it's everything is kind of on the supplier, like a typical marketplace model.
Yeah, our typical approach to, and it was with both Avalara and Miracle, is like, we need all your functionality. How do we make it all work together?
From a supplier shipping side, I wanted to get into this with Nick a little bit. A vendor is shipping from a warehouse, but when that shipment happens, because it's not going through the kind of the marketplace operator yet. Say it ships to Florida, or it ships to Ohio, or it ships to Washington. That's a Nexus event. Explain to me just like, and it's been a few years since I've tracked this with like Wayfair and like all the laws that have come up over the years. Like, how do marketplace tax rules actually work today?
Yeah, that's a big question, Rick. And Alan's, you know, comes in and asked me that question because Nexus for marketplaces, the marketplace facilitator rules change depending on state. So in Alabama or in Arkansas or different states across the country may have specific rules as a marketplace facilitator say, hey, you got to register right away, right out of the gate. You have to be registered whether you've done business there or not because of these marketplace facilitator laws. And then there's this exemption status where you're not actually handling the tax, you're passing it through, but you're ultimately relationship of shipping and drop shipping and bringing those to market. And that provides an additional layer of exposure. And you have to register and you have to handle that payments arrangements back to the state. And so Wayfair is one of those pieces.
Yeah.
But on top of that, and Alan probably alluded to it, is there is so much to keep up and track with. And how does he do that? He just does it within his Miracle platform that speaks to the Avalara interface to see where his exposure is and where he should kind of look at that. And then you get into the content, like what's he selling? How is he selling it? Those relationships inside the Miracle inventory platform and the logistics platform show what he's shipping, show what he's selling to the end marketplace. And so how their relationship is, the content changes based on the tax rules there in each state. And so that's where the complexity really becomes. And then you start transitioning over different lines, the US or Canada or across global penetration. And now you're changing these tariffs and rules that have now implied retail shipping in different rules and different regulations. And the big one right now is electronic invoicing in the globe. Overseas, which Alan, I know you might be looking at as well from a global perspective. So that's probably a big piece of your business as well from a compliance standpoint.
Yeah, no, interesting enough, like we right now we're North American focused, but that will be where we're going next. But also what we've already hit with the international is that we have some vendors who are international who are selling into the US. So helping them understand, and some of them don't even know what sales tax is. Again, some of the smaller vendors, because that's not, they use a VAT system in Europe, for example, rather than a sales tax system. So you have to sort of educate them on, hey, are you registered for here for sales tax? Are you doing this? And a lot of them are using third-party facilitators for their shipping and things like that. So they think they're all set up. But then we have to sort of help them and educate them a little bit on, okay, how do we structure this in a way that we're all compliant and remain so, you know, for the foreseeable future as they're moving in. And then, you know, you have this layered challenge without having the right infrastructure. You'd have this layered challenge of, it's hard to predict what the volumes are going to be from any given vendor in any given location. So, you know, we can talk to the international vendors is just a good example. It's like, okay, well, we don't know if they're product is going to be really exciting in Florida, or it's going to be California, or it's going to be, you know, and how do we predict the sales volumes and say, hey, when are they going to hit a point where, because there is a threshold that you can hit in any given state. So if you're, and Nicholas, you may know this better than I, but a little bit more, 100,000 or so, but if you're only doing 20 or 30,000 because it's a new vendor and that there's some leeway with not having to report, but again, without, you could turn around and without looking, all of a sudden you could exceed that sales quota, you know, so how do you anticipate that when you don't have casting, you know, it's the joys of retailing, you know, that we're used to, but that's what we're working on.
Yeah, Rick, I'll tell you, and Alan nailed it, like Ohio, he's based in Ohio, but in New York, it's a $500,000 level. And in Texas, it's a 500,000 and 200 transactions. Or in Arkansas, it could just be 100,000 transactions and you're hit Nexus liability. So it all depends on that infrastructure, where you're sending your inventory. Have you hit these certain thresholds that Alan alluded to? And how do you keep up with that? Miracle does a great job to keep track of those sales and then sends it over to Avalara so that we can then, Town Chest can then have that infrastructure and see where their requirements lie from a compliance standpoint, and make sure that they're legally liable and sending the right information back to the states and requirements from a checkpoint of tax compliance.
If you're anything like the CEOs and ops leaders I talk to, you're tired of the AI hype cycle. You're ready to move past the prototypes and actually use AI in your daily workflow. This is exactly where Avalara is leaning in. They aren't just giving you a chatbot to answer questions. They've built agentic tax and compliance. Here's why that matters. Most AI just assists you like a sidekick. It gives you more homework. Avalara's AI agents actually do the work. We're talking about AI that lives inside your ERP or your Shopify store to automate the entire lifecycle, from tax calculations and cross-border classification to actually filing the returns and resolving jurisdictional notices. It's about moving from data to decisions in seconds. You can query your tax data in natural language and get back expert verified answers, not AI hallucinations. If you want to stop messing around with manual compliance and start scaling, you need to see what they're doing with Avi. Go check out the page they set up just for this show. Get the full breakdown at avalaratax.watsonweekly.com. That's avalaratax.watsonweekly.com. There's been a lot of discussions in here about helping the supplier, because the supplier doesn't know what they don't know. They're just trying to sell something to a consumer. This is a sales opportunity to them, which was supposed to be the hard part, right, Ellen? But of course, onboarding them and educating them, onboarding all those products, first of all, on each supplier and onboarding the products, there seems to be a lot of, AI, even communication between Miracle and Avalara. I would love maybe if Justin, you could walk us through that at the beginning, and maybe Nick can pitch in on the product side.
Yeah, for sure. So from a seller onboarding point, the number one thing Miracle tries to do is make it as easy as possible for any supplier, no matter what their starting point is, to be able to upload their product data, their pricing, et cetera, and get live as soon as possible. So we do have a ton of AI, and I know a lot of that works partners with Avalara. One of the AI products we have is something called Catalog Transformer that basically is our AI powered taxonomy engine that ingests all of that data and then looks at, hey, where are there gaps in that data? And, where do things maybe not fit the tone of voice of the retailer, et cetera, and help to actually transform that data to make that as easy as possible so that it's one click for the supplier to be like, yeah, that's great, that's the right info, and then one click for the retailer as well. So, incredible amounts of AI built into the platform to just make this as quick and seamless as possible.
Yeah, and then on the back end from the transformation of category transformation for Miracle, Avi then picks it up in Avatax and provides a category classification of what he's selling and lets them know, hey, this is the product SKU that you're using inside of Miracle. Avi lets them know, hey, this is the content SKU or category tax code you're supposed to use, determining that product sent over from Miracle. And so that LLM that's speaking between our two softwares helps to alleviate some of that pain that Alan experiences when it comes to the actual categories that you're sending or the products that you're sending over to wherever state you're end up shipping or relationship between the marketplaces.
Got it. And who's Avi, Nick? Is somebody under your desk there or something?
Avi is under our desk. Yeah, he is our AI agent that helps to categorize and review all of the product categories that are sent over from our customer. And so it reviews it, lets it know what tax codes are applied. It's from our tax library engine, and it pulls different resources from transactional volume that Alan's doing. And then, but Avi is on my shoulder usually.
There you go. Obviously, with hundreds, thousands of vendors, every vendor has its own brand. The retailer, in this case, Townchest, how do you think about your brand standards? And in particular, it's a school environment. Mm-hmm. There might even be sort of like safety concerns, because there are kids, there is always kids involved. There's compliance from that angle too.
Right.
Even if it's not legal compliance, it might be what an administration wants compared to a different one. Like, how do you think about the standards that you enforce and that the standards that the school might want to enforce?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Rick. So we like to say we like flexibility with strict rules. So is what we try to do is build a framework that gives them a fairly flexible way, because it's, for our manufacturers and our partners, it's their brands and also the school's brands too. So the school, we want to respect the brand of the school. They have a philosophy and what they're trying to do. And we're all about just helping move that next generation forward, right? That's sort of our whole philosophy as a company, you know, helping kids educate and all that. We just like the whole mission for us. But at the same time, there are sort of that diversity of product and mix. So what we do is we set minimum, what we view as minimum standards across all, both brands, both return policies, but, you know, because we talk about the brand standards, but it's also, you got to make sure you've got minimum return policies because each brand is slightly different. You know, we have like bare minimum standards we set, and they are actually high standards, but we've sort of, as we work with our partners, and thankfully for us, most of our partners are already meeting them or exceeding those. But then it's the setting the standards as you're setting up the vendor and making everything from photo images to the classic sort of branding stuff. And that's where actually Miracle helps us a lot because they've got a whole infrastructure there that helps us maintain that because, you know, we would need an army of people to try, you know, keep it going, which would be difficult. But also helps our suppliers too, because by giving them sort of those guidelines and those rules, it helps them sort of maintain their own content, you know, quite well. But for us, we also, you know, so we strictly enforce, but we also have to give them a little bit of breadth of knowledge. So we're very focused on, you know, what products will be on the site. You know, we're a family-friendly retailer. You know, there's certain product categories that we just don't support. That helps too, you know, because our taxonomy helps us structure that. You know, we have thousands of product categories that we support. There's certain categories we just don't. So, and, you know, people respect that and understand it. But the actual, and then it's an ongoing thing. So once you set the vendor up, it's just, you've just started, if you like, the management process. You haven't, you'd like to say you're finished, but that's just the beginning, you know, as you go. And then, you know, we're working backwards and forth. They're bringing in new lines and, you know, even trying to enforce the MAP pricing. You know, we're a big believer in sort of MAP pricing. For us, our customers can, you know, get comparable pricing because, you know, what's important for us is that our supporters and our customers don't feel that they're paying extra to support the school. So we're very much, we enforce sort of a strict pricing model that if they bought it on our channel or they bought it somewhere else, they'll actually pay the same for like product. Mm-hmm. Our suppliers do that. And that's important for us because otherwise, you know, we don't have that promise that we're making to the school that says you no longer have to ask more money for your supporters. You just have to have them shop like they normally do and they're going to be supporting you. So, you know, that's very important for us for our brand standards. When you talk, Rick, about, you know, we have certain standards and certain policies that we have to enforce, but the infrastructure that, you know, combination of Miracle and Avalara gives us that scalability that we need and helps us sort of put the guideposts in, if you like, as we're moving forward, because we can't continually predict, you know, who the next vendor is or who the next school is or where they're located. So it's trying to meet that mix.
No, it makes sense. And it just kind of sheds light on just exactly how many decisions you need to make as a market, even with the tools, like you need to decide how to use the tools,
right?
Because that kind of flexibility and control, I'm interested in kind of your thoughts, Justin, about that as a marketplace operator. How do you decide to draw the line between like, okay, these things are just enforced, these are bright lines, these are more like gray lines, these are suggestions?
Yeah, for sure. So it's always a fun topic to talk about SLAs, right?
Right.
But it's so critical to get that right. And there are some SLAs, you know, when a seller's onboarded that you have to strictly enforce. I'll give you some good examples. If you have a seller that misses two orders, they don't accept two orders in a row, that probably means that their warehouse isn't working or something has gone really wrong and you need to kill that relationship immediately and fix it. Versus, hey, you know, this product category that you brought in has high return rates, right? That maybe you don't want to kill immediately. So having that flexibility from all of those different aspects of SLA management, you really need to be able to figure out what's most important to have automatic deactivations versus more alerts. Even going back though to just finding the right sellers. You know, there are so many ways, so many sellers out there. I mean, you look at Amazon, there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of sellers. What's good? What's bad? What's critical? And I know we probably helped the Town Chest team with this is developing a scorecard to figure out like, how do we actually search for like the right brands, the right sellers that, you know, will hit our standards. So that even before they're, you know, part of the platform, we know that they're going to perform. And there's a lot of ways to do that, and we can discuss that later. But, you know, it's critical to, you know, start with the best possible sellers and then make sure that you have full visibility of them throughout that entire journey.
No. And would you say, sorry, Rick, I think that ahead. That relationship between the seller and the success of that seller, Alan kind of alluded to it. It's like the number of transactions and how it's coming through. How am I seeing my success? Justin's Miracle Interface lets us know, here's where most of the successful transactions are happening. This is the proof in the pudding through his back office data. And so he can say, oh, this is a really successful seller. This is where I can go. This is where my movement is. This is the products that are selling more effectively. So that, Alan, I'm sure is coming into play a lot while you're growing, expanding.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the other thing to be more on from the other thing that it helps us with is actually building that relationship with ourselves, because we're all about long-term relationships as opposed to sort of anonymous. We want relationships with all of our, even if we have 10,000 or 20,000 on them, we do want to use sort of the tools that are provided to help build that and cultivate that relationship. And sometimes we're advising them on the best way to position things because, you know, some of our manufacturers are new to direct to consumer, you know, to using manufacturers. So it works both ways, right? So, you know, they're not necessarily superly experienced. They've gone through other channels in the past, and this is their first foray into sort of direct to consumer. So they're more geared towards shipping by the pallet load as opposed to shipping by the individual box and all that goes along with that, the marketing side and things like that. And the tools that both Miracle help us with and indeed Avalara from a pricing and a, you know, even we mentioned earlier in this conversation about like the tax codes for products. Like we've actually talked to a couple of vendors and we're saying, hey, what's your sales tax code? And they're like, what? Because we're dealing with the product manager, not somebody who's necessarily originated that. Right. So I think the tools help you in that regard, but help you scale and monitor it as we go to help advise them as well as, you know, obviously make sure we're picking the winners as we move forward.
Yeah. And we always like to talk about real things here. And so I would love to like wrap up here with you, Alan, talking a little bit about like, what are some things that you had done differently if you could do it all over again from the beginning? Or are there things that you're still fighting? Like these doesn't have to be necessarily bad, but like, what are the areas of opportunity that you see kind of going forward?
Yeah, no, I think maybe start with the first question, Rick, on, you know, what would we do differently? I think we would have thought more nationwide sooner. I mean, if I had a hindsight, I would have been sort of take a step back and it always sounds simple in hindsight, but you know, take a step back and just assume super success that we were going to have vendors in every model and every location. And then sort of, you know, we got there eventually with obviously partnering with the great partners we have here on the webinar. But, you know, it was something that we grew into. We sort of backed our way into it as opposed to, you know, ideally we should have sort of thought it, you know, we didn't know what we didn't know. But at the same time, if had we thought nationwide instead of, like our first thought was regional, and I think we're all for deploying regionally still. You know, you still would, that still makes sense. You don't have to deploy it immediately, but that would be one of the things that we would probably shift a little bit on that. And then for us, it's also, you know, in maintaining content and brands and like streamlining, one of the things we learned as we got through it was broadening our whole taxonomy. And this was something that Miracle preached for, you know, quite a while, but you sort of hear it and you go, yeah, okay, but we're going to start with the vendors we've got. And I think that's one that we still expand because our breadth of product is quite large. We have over 3,000 categories of product already, and it's continuing to grow. So, but it's making sure that when you, as you attribute that, you get that going, it's always the underestimated effort. Like it's just managing content and things like that. I think, you know, that's one of the things, Rick, we continue to manage our way through, you know, we bring on new vendors because it's new categories and, you know, when do you turn on a new product category? You know, what's the critical mass and this critical scale you need? Because, you know, we as we bring on new vendors and is it a high level category or a low level category? And they're decisions we have to make, but we have to do it where for every vendor, their product should be front and center, right? All the time. So it's hitting that balance, I think, would be one of the things we'd look at differently.
No, that's great. And Justin, I mean, I would love to get to you and then and end on Nick, which is like, what are things like, you know, for operators or in the audience, what are things that they underestimate consistently as you talk to people and they come in?
Yeah, for sure. And I think this touches a little bit about what Alan mentioned about going nationwide and, you know, expanding. just how quickly these platforms can scale. And we actually did some research on this. And if you look at marketplaces that launched 5-10 years ago compared to today, the growth rates are 2-4 times faster. They're bigger than they were back then. It's just because these ecosystems are so well developed now.
Right.
Like, this is the way that retail is working. This is the future of e-commerce. So, you know, I think the idea of be serendipitous around marketplace, around having this platform that allows you to very quickly expand your assortment, go into new categories and test new things. I think that it requires, you know, a really strong mindset of agility. And I think, you know, that's one thing that we advise for all of our clients is to really test and learn in rapid iteration, because the scale you can get is pretty impressive pretty quickly. So
yeah,
it's fun stuff.
Yeah, Rick. And I would say from a scale growth perspective, like Alan kind of alluded, he let it go into it. He was waiting to see what happens is if you start at the beginning and say, what is my compliance risk? Where's my liability? How do I set up my success path for compliance at the beginning stages so I can handle the growth? That has always been a misleading nightmare for a lot of marketplaces, because they're just not ready for it. And so if you're ready for it and you have the challenge at hand and you work with great partners like Mirakl to give that infrastructure, and then you have a compliance solution in place before you grow, that kind of gives you this launch pad that alleviates a lot of that nightmare overnight and can help you grow your business without worrying about liability and exposure that could cost you thousands of dollars in audits and liability that ultimately, you know, could stop your business from growing.
No, I mean, I think it's so interesting, as someone who's built marketplaces in the past, how quickly that these models can scale now, because, you know, although it's not 100% true, as Alan said, some suppliers have never shipped direct to consumer before, and that, I think that's still going to happen. Others, it's like an old hat. So like if I'm on 5 marketplaces or 10 marketplaces, it's all the same to me because I have my system set up. There's no way you can scale a marketplace without great partners. And I think treating these partners as strategic partners, because there's no way to know everything about this space anymore, from like content management to onboarding to attributes to Nexus rules and tax codes and Nick's friend Avi and like all these things are, Alan, you're just trying to help schools. I mean, does that resonate, or like how do you think about that as a wrap up?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, there's a lot of complexity there that, you know, having like we went into the relationships with both Avalara and Mirakl as a partnership kind of relationship, because again, we don't know everything about it. You know, there's a lot of advice that they can provide. We know what we want to do. We know our mission. You know, we feel we're helping the community. We're helping the schools. We're charging ahead with that. But sometimes, you know, you have to sort of take a step back and say, okay, have I got the infrastructure and the scalability? Because we think this is just a runaway success. It has been so far for us. We're getting more and more schools on board. There's 27,000 high schools in the U.S., and every one of them should be on TownChest, and I think they will be in the next time we're on this seminar. So, you know, yeah. So, but it's making sure that we can scale and grow with them, and, you know, we need people for the long haul. It's not just a piece of software, it's the process and deploy it. You know, we have a saying internally that, you know, anything's possible for time and money with software, you know, but, you know, it's really about, do you have the right business process, and are you applying the technologies and the capabilities the right way? And I think having partners that can help you do that is critical.
No, that's great. And I really appreciate it. I wanted to thank you personally, Alan, for being on, as well for Justin and Nick and participating. And big shout out to Avalara for sponsoring this content, and Mirakl as a great partner for participating as well.
Great. Thank you, Rick. Great pleasure.
Thanks, everyone. I appreciate everyone coming on. And this has been the Watson Weekly. Thanks for listening in.